The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you're having a good day. We kind of move into a different kind of time, don't we? It's not like chronological anymore when you get into Zazenkai. So this spring, Ango, we have the theme of mountain training, the eight gates of Zen. And I didn't really know what I wanted to talk about this week. So sometimes I just go to the library and I just look at the shelves and just see what jumps out at me. And I picked up this book that I loved reading before called Buddha by Karen Armstrong. And so I just started leafing through it. It's nice and yellow. And I just was like, oh, there's something interesting in here where she's talking about, does it work? Like, does your practice work, whatever you're engaged in? How do you know if it works? And she said, in any practice. And she said that was like the Buddha's, at the heart of the Buddha's quest, and his realization was testing things, practices. He went through a number of them, and does this work in terms of, for him, it was, is this settling his question about why we suffer? That was what he was after. Like, why is there suffering? Who's suffering? What is suffering? Why do we keep suffering? So I thought I would take a look at that question a little bit more of, does this work? It's a good one to ask ourselves on occasion. And how do we know? And how do we receive answers? Are we looking for a sentence, this works because, and we're getting analytical or what is it? What else is operating? You know, Daito Roshi said, gave us these eight gates, which is his recasting, in a way, of the Eightfold Path of the Buddha. But he says, these are gates we enter, but there are actually no gates. There aren't gates. It's just one body, one mind. And we look at these aspects of ourself that we develop as a person, our creative beingness, our intellect, our body, our relationships, our morality. And so we have these particular areas of focus where we can experience the richness of our life through them and see how they're all interrelated. And it's all what we call our life. It's just our life. And how many gates do we enter here today through this Zazenkai? Probably all of them. We touch on all of them. Student-teacher relationship, liturgy, moral and ethical teachings, creative expression, the miracle of aliveness of the body, the study of the Dharma, right action. And often students come, and I did myself, wondering to my teachers, is this working? And they would say, you tell me. You tell me. Where do you find yourself? So why are we in the Sendo? Why are you in the Sendo? Why am I in the Sendo? I think it's important to keep looking at and re-feeling into, and not look for linear answers, but allow for something we don't know about, something larger to open, to one that we wonder about. And I think it's good to keep checking, because we can get lost in that initial impulse. It can become muddy. You know, some of us start and we're suffering greatly. And then that shifts a bit after we start practicing. And then, why do we continue? So, what is that the essence of why we turned in the first place? Sometimes it gets lost in form. We lose that connection. We get lost in form. Or we're dependent on something external that's holding us. And sometimes we start practicing for one reason, and we may still be clinging to that old way through habit. Just like we cling to relationships in the past or to jobs after things have passed their time and they no longer fulfill what they used to fulfill. So we have to keep checking in again on that spark, because everything keeps shifting and changing. So to ask from time to time, why am I doing this, could be helpful. And it's important to remember that we're here by choice. Nobody put us in a straitjacket and said, you're coming to Zazenkai today. We weren't airlifted in. We came by choice, right? You knew it was going to be sunny today. So it's important to recognize we're here by ourselves. That's good to recognize. And we begin practice by a choice, even though we might seem like we had no choice. We made a choice that we had no choice. We're not here because of our parents, not really, or our heritage, because of institutions. Or maybe you are. Is that working? And we always begin in a kind of an inquiry, right? I wonder what it's like if I go to a Sunday service. I wonder what it's like at this temple. Why am I going? Somebody introduced me. That's why I went. Really? Is that what was happening? Maybe we're just curious. Sometimes, for some of us, the fruits of our inquiry will be of no interest. And if they do interest us, then we'll start to explore. We'll start to explore and to see what the exploration brings up. So, in a sense, we're all on an expedition together. And Shugen used to always refer to Ango as like this big ship goes out when we start Ango. And I always saw like this big expedition. We're all going out on this ship together. And then if that exploration is sustained, we kind of make a commitment. Commitment, the C word. But that's necessary in a deep exploration. You know, I think it was Cornfield. He wrote that book, Path with a Heart, with a Heart. On the back it says Path Without a Heart. There was a misprint. It was interesting. And he wrote something like, you know, we can dig a lot of holes, but eventually we have to dig a deep hole. Otherwise we just get a lot of holes. So I picked up this book by Karen Armstrong. It's really clear. I love her style of writing, a lot of clarity. But she does, she makes it, brings out this question of, does it work? And that, how that finally led to Buddha's realization experience. And so I wanted to read a few sentences from it. She says, a person's theology was a matter of total indifference to the Buddha. To accept a doctrine on somebody else's authority was, in his eyes, an unskillful state which could not lead to enlightenment because it was an abdication of personal responsibility. He saw no virtue to submitting to an official creed. Faith meant trust that nirvana, or peace, existed, and a determination to prove it to oneself, that I could be at peace, and to prove that to myself. The Buddha always insisted that his disciples test everything he taught them against their own experience and take nothing on hearsay. A religious idea could all too easily become a mental idol. One more thing to cling to, when the purpose of the Dharma was to help people to let go. Even his own teachings must be jettisoned once they have done their job. There's that koan that says, if you see the Buddha, kill the Buddha, which is referring to that. You know, don't put a head on top of the one that you have. Yours is fine. So he keeps making the point over, does it work? Not, do I believe it? Am I doing it right? Am I better than, does it work for me? Does this work for me? That's all Shakyamuni Buddha was interested in. And maybe what we should be interested in. Does it work? The pragmatic basis of our exploration is, does it work? So explorers knew that if they saw something, they had to continue their exploration. When we get a glimpse of something we've never seen before, how do we then, in practice, know to continue? We know it's necessary to continue, perhaps because when we see something with our ears or hear with our eyes, and we have an insight, when we realize something we have never realized or seen before is brought to light. And we realize by being aware. Awareness is the tool of our attention. I think attention and awareness are interchangeable. And that makes us uniquely human, that we can be aware. There's an old Zen story, and it came up 3 times this week, so I thought I should say it. 3 times I heard this story by other people, and I read it. A student asked Master Ishu, please write me something of great wisdom. Master Ishu picked up a brush and wrote one word, attention. The student said, is that all? The master wrote, attention, attention. The student became irritable. That doesn't seem very profound or subtle to me. In response, Master Ichu wrote simply, attention, attention, attention. In frustration, the student demanded, what does the word attention mean? And Master Ichu replied, attention means attention. And like this student, we might find this is really disappointing that that's the answer we get. So dry and uninteresting. Attention. What's the most important, the greatest wisdom? Attention. But isn't there something else? Attention. It's like I thought of Mae West, where she sings, is that all there is? Is that all there is? Let's keep on dancing. Yet without attention, there really isn't practice. We have to see. We have to get insight into what's happening. So we have to have attention. Not tension, attention. And awareness is the makeup of our present experience. It's what's going on now. What's going on now? What are you aware of? Might we know that's how our practice is working? What I was thinking of was many students will come, and I've done this with my teacher, and I'll go through like, my mind is so busy, and I snapped at this person, and I can't believe how angry I got, and I don't know if this is working. And I remember Daito Roshi saying, well, that's a lot that you've seen that you're attentive to. What's not working? How many people see that? See, that's what's actually happening with us. And we just brush that off like it's just nothing. We can't do anything unless we see something like that. Otherwise, it just goes on autopilot. But when we see it and we feel like something is happening with that, then we can shift. We can look into it further. Like if we're confused, seeing confusion with awareness, we can see that if we're confused, then there must be something that's not confused. Because we see we're confused. That's wisdom. But we brush that aside. So we say, I'm confused. Something hasn't come through yet. We have to be patient. It just means we don't see something yet. But what we do see is confusion. That's attentive. I know you're all like, what the heck? Experiential awareness. That's how we prove it to ourselves. Am I able to see this person or this situation in a broader way? Am I able to sit with confusion arising? Am I able to move through this crisis with more calmness? Am I able to look at the news and the things that are happening and stay present? Am I able to open more to owning the dark side, the more shadowy sides of myself as it arises in Zazen or in my life, my compulsions, my cravings, needs, my bad feelings? Can I be there? Can I be attentive to that? Just seeing it arise. Am I present to this now? Is there letting, non-grasping? Is my universe expanding or shrinking? Am I able to face suffering? Is this happening to some measure or not? Are you who you were a couple years ago? Think of something that really, like, bothered you. It may still. But sometimes there are certain things that was unbearable a couple years ago, and now we're like, what was that? What was that? What happened? How come it's different now? Is it working? And does it work? I don't think we can go to the mind for our answers, not all of them. And I remember this quote that I've remembered for years. I've loved it, which is, to go to the mind is to find the answer to the question, does Zen work, is like asking a corrupt police department to investigate itself. Can't be done. So we have to go to something else besides the mind sometimes, because it's corrupt. Doesn't always give us the correct answer. But only not mine does. Sometimes our not knowing does. This inner sense, our inner connection, knows if it works. Yeah. So we have to expand that not knowing or uncertainty of what's happening. And there's a lot of fear around uncertainty, so much. Because uncertainty is the loss of what's comfortable, familiar, the known. The self that we call I is made up of mostly knowns. So this is taking us to unknowns. It's mostly made up of fixed points of certainty. That's why I continually try to prop myself up. I'm okay. Tell me I'm okay. Tell me I'm doing okay. Tell me I'm right. You're wrong, so I can be right. Clinging to identities, titles, talents, possessions, people, religions, ideals, all propping this up to something that's fixed, settled, dependable. At least they can depend upon it. And Zazenkai, or Sesshin at the deepest level, is an advance by choice into that not known. By choice, we're sitting into not being certain, into unknown. But all the knowns come up. I'm this, they're that, that. We cycle through all the knowns. And we just want to release it. The experience of no road ahead, no fixed point, no dependable map, no destined end, no result. It's hard. I sit there sometimes and I feel my mind just go into that. Like it's like a Pac-Man. What about? I'm like, settle down, you're right here. You don't have to go over there. The practice of all day sitting is the constant choice of returning to the experience of not known, not fixed, instead of running to the familiar. It's the experience of not, not. So we have to expand that not mind. Somebody wrote a book once called It's Figure Outable. I thought that was really a funny title. I didn't go into it. But we're constantly trying to figure out most everything. Constantly try to grasp at our mind. Use outer sources as a yardstick. So, not mind is zazen. Unknown, unfixed. It's not the Buddha, it's not the Dharma, it's not the teacher. It's not this Dharma talk, it's not the Sangha. It's not anything at all. It's our individual practice of not mind, of not known, and our commitment to seeing this as urgent, as the most important thing. We need teaching, for sure, because we do confuse the finger that's pointing to the moon. But we need to find out about the path, the teachings that remove confusion. That's necessary. We need to be analytical sometimes, for sure. These aren't absolutes. We need the Sangha. We need these practices to keep going, to keep us from falling into delusion, to ignorance. But I don't know, ultimately they're maybe secondary. It's just zazen, just sitting, where we can combust our lives and we do our best to bring the body along. But our deepest, most honest self knows what we must do, that we can identify a coasting zazen and then re-enter a deep, committed, on the edge, wherever we are, zazen. And we know, not knowing, we're aware. Then we can really answer, does this work? And with great care, keep letting go of the ideas, the ideations, the projections, what we want to look like. That's mind. So it must arise out of ourself, our body. And when it does, we will know. And we won't have to believe. So I'll close with another piece from her book, where she says, "The Dharma is essentially a method, and it stands or falls not by its metaphysicality or acuity or its scientific accuracy, but by the extent to which it works. The truths claim to bring suffering to an end, but not because people subscribe to a salvific creed or to certain beliefs, rather because they enter the Buddha's way of life. Over the centuries, people have indeed found that this path has brought them a measure of peace and insight. They have realized that by reaching beyond themselves to a reality that transcends their rational understanding, one becomes fully human. For the Buddha, that was a fact. For him, it worked. What if we simply stayed with any moment of recognition? We wake up from a thought, and there's just this recognition of our present situation, just where we are. We just come out of the thought, and we just recognize just this unknown sitting here. What if we rest with that? What if we allow our confusion to trigger wisdom? To allow anything that we encounter be an invitation to wisdom. Does that work for you?
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.